cloudy skies at 61 degrees. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. It is the day after, and Georgia Governor Nathan Deal today lifted the mandatory evacuation order for six coastal counties. Of course, that was initially ordered when Hurricane Irma was on its way. Still, as recovery begins, Deal says getting back to normal will take time.
The entire state of Georgia has been affected by this hurricane slash tropical storm. And as a result of that, recovery is going to be a little more slow because there are so much greater territories that have to be covered before everything can be back to a normal environment.
Well, and getting back to that normal environment doesn't just apply to Georgia residents. Homer Bryson is the director of Georgia Emergency Management and Homeland Security Agency.
We are urging Georgia and Florida residents to remain in place until local officials authorize reentry. Once officials say it is safe to return home, use designated evacuation routes for reentry, and included in that are state roads.
And Director Bryson says there's another reason folks just simply need to stay put.
Fuel outages are being reported throughout the state. In addition to the difficulty with resupply due to the storm, stations in South Georgia are also experiencing power outages and flooding of their tanks, preventing them from reopening. We want everyone to be aware that access to fuel will not be guaranteed if they choose to travel south.
And as you know, many lost power as the tropical storm Irma hit Georgia. Paul Bowers is president and CEO of Georgia Power.
There's not a region within this state that has not been affected by some power outages. Within the metro region specifically, there are currently 400,000 customers without power. At our peak, we had almost 1 million customers without power. Today, at this moment, we're at 780, so over 20% have been restored. But let me reiterate, every region of this state has been affected, and it's going to take time for us to get back to normal in terms of power restoration. We have over 6,000 resources dedicated to this restoration effort, and we will take numerous days in some areas of the state to get power restored. But our focus is to get our customers back online, get to normal as fast as we can.
And we'll have an update with Georgia Power with Adrian Tickle in just a moment. Now, surviving power outages was also a concern for hospitals. Commissioner Patrick O'Neill is from Georgia Department of Public Health.
One of the major challenges, as you've heard from others, has been the lack of power in certain areas of the state, in fact, throughout the state. This did affect the hospital community yesterday. We had some 15 hospitals that lost power. The good news, though, is that all of those hospitals had backup generators that were able to kick in. And as of last night, by 8 p.m., all 15 of the hospitals were back on regular power.
Now, from power outages to traveling on the roadways, Georgia Department of Transportation Commissioner Russell McMurray says, yes, all interstates in Georgia are passable, but stay off the roads while GDOT is working.
Starting yesterday, we had over 1,100 incidences of road closures. This morning, we are down to 179 closures across the state. Oftentimes, the trees that are down may have a power line in them, so again, we're asking you to stay home and stay out of the way so that between our crews and the power crews, we can get these roads cleared and open very quickly.
And Commissioner McMurray added, it's not just roads that need repairing.
As the power is out, that has also caused over 250 traffic signals to be non-functional. In fact, there's about 150 signal heads that are missing, that are damaged, that have to be replaced.
And if you are hard-headed and you still want to be on the roads, the main message from the Georgia Department of Transportation is really quite clear.
Starting yesterday, we had over 1,100 incidences of road closures. This morning, we are down to 179 closures across the state. Oftentimes, the trees that are down may have a power line in them. So, again, we're asking you to stay home and stay out of the way so that between our crews and the power crews, we can get these roads cleared and open very quickly.
And as for traveling via MARTA, rail service has been restored, but there are numerous bus routes impacted by downed trees and power lines, and officials say check the website for that list. Meanwhile, MARTA will add an extra day of credit for those with registered Breeze cards because of yesterday's suspended service. Now, in just a moment, we'll check in with Georgia Power and get a progress report on all the issues that need to be restored.
Support for WABE comes from the Zuckerman Museum of Art, presenting the exhibition Medium. Everyone has a ghost story. What's yours? Reception September 16th. You can learn more at zuckerman.kennesaw.edu. And from Kimberly-Clark Corporation, home of household essentials including Kleenex, Scott, Huggies, and Kotex brands, dedicated to sustaining the world and strengthening our communities. Info on their 143 years of innovation online at kimberly-clark.com.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. As you just heard, at one point, more than a million people in the state were without power. To get the latest on those Georgia Power households, we now turn to spokesperson Adrian Tickle. Adrian, thanks for taking the time. I know y'all are extremely busy.
Thank you for having us.
Let's begin with the latest. How many households are without power?
We currently have just over 700,000 customers without power.
Are there specific areas of the state that may take longer to restore power than others?
Well, our damage assessment teams are out today, and then the crews are following behind them. So, of course, the coastal area was hit, and then South Georgia were hit. But, you know, Metro Atlanta suffered quite a hit as well with those damaging winds from the storm yesterday. So we are looking at several days possibly to restore power, possibly a week at this point.
Possibly a week. We know that safety, of course, is a priority for your crews. After a storm event like Irma, what are the challenges for them that it could take a week? Is it just because there's so many people without electricity?
Yes, that's it. And there are more than 10,000 individual incidents. So our crews have got to visit each of those locations to restore power for all of our customers. So that's what takes so long. Now, the good news is we've engaged more than 6,000 resources to work through those outages. So we have teams on the ground. They're working around the clock and staying safe.
You know, we had a listener contact Closer Look, and he says, you know, in my DeKalb neighborhood near Redan and Indian Creek, I was knocked out for 9 hours. My sister, he writes, lives on a dirt road in South Georgia where the eye of Irma passed overhead, never lost power. He wants to know if there is a density factor in all of this. Do you know?
I do not know those specifics.
Mm-hmm. At first, Georgia Power was issuing an estimation on power being restored. Is that still the case, or really, or have y'all moved away from trying to give some projected timeline when power will be restored to households?
There is not a projected timeline specifically for individual households. Our crews are out there working around the clock. We had some that were out there yesterday as well. So it will be possibly several days for some of our customers.
I know you all usually on your website have a power outage grid, a map. Is that still the case? Are you still encouraging people to call just to make sure you all are aware of power being out in some areas?
Yes. Yeah. If people will still call and report those outages and utilize the outage map, it will give you up-to-date information as far as the outages go. And then when we do have restoration times, when it gets closer to that time, you know, once those damage crews finish assessing, they'll be able to have a better idea of that.
And Adrian Tickle, before we let you go, just reiterate again, if folks without power, you could say it could take anywhere from a few days to a week?
That is correct.
Wow. Adrian Tickle, spokesperson for Georgia Power, thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And we move now from power outages to grounded flights. We know that Tropical Storm Irma grounded hundreds of flights scheduled in and out of Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. Time now to check in with my brother from another, Andrew Gobeil, spokesperson from Hartsfield-Jackson. Andrew, welcome again.
Rose, people are going to start talking.
Well, they already have. I believe TMZ has said they spotted us somewhere having coffee.
Here at the airport. How are you today?
All
How'd
right.
you make out, by the way?
I was okay. Me and the cats on the couch just chilling.
Very
throughout
good.
The night. Let's begin here with those winds from Tropical Storm Irma. Apparently, there was a report that some clocked in at 65 miles per hour out at the airport. Were there any structural damages to any part of the airport?
No, there was no structural damage to the airport at all. I certainly don't want to say we. It was the maintenance guys, the maintenance heroes, men and women who were out there taking care of everything. So there were no structural impacts whatsoever to the airport. We monitored the storm as it was coming in. If there were any issues, if there was anything that had made its way out into the airfield, it was removed quickly. But, you know, as we've said for the past few days, with a hurricane, you have ample notice. Mm-hmm. We're able to prepare for that. We had all of our maintenance and airside and landside crews out there making sure that everything was secured. And the other issue, too, is we've discussed, you know, we're in the middle of our multi-billion dollar construction project, mm-hmm. and there is so many different laydown areas where they keep all of the construction equipment. So in the 24 hours leading up to the storm, we made sure that everything there was secure to prevent it from becoming a missile or a projectile, and that was exactly the case. So even with those gusts, there were no reports of any structural damage here at the airport.
Now, we've heard about the calm before the storm. Does that calm still in progress? What's the scene at the airport right now?
You know, to be honest with you, the scene is as it would be for midday any Tuesday. This is Tuesday, right?
Midday
any Tuesday. We've got our musicians performing in the atrium. We've got people sitting in the atrium prepared to go through security. The security wait time is less than 15 minutes, which is obviously well within our stated goal. Our partners with the TSA have, you know, ramped up staffing as well, so they're ready to go. And it is as is normal. Now, we do have, and I'll give you the numbers, we do have some cancellations. Mm-hmm. So far today, there are, as of now, about 187 cancellations. That's equally arrivals and departures, and that's mainly to the airports that were impacted down in Florida and in the Caribbean.
And so those airlines are slowly getting back on schedule is what you're saying.
Yeah, they are. And here's the one thing, the one message that I'd like to get out there to all of the travelers. And we've said this as well before. Please reach out to your airline. Mm-hmm. If you were to fly out yesterday or earlier today or your flights were impacted, reach out to the airline's communication channels and find out what their plans are, because they'll make plans for you and with you to determine how best to get back on track. Now, we expect to see later this afternoon and into tomorrow, the atrium here at the airport will be busy and the security lines will be, you know, efficient but busy as well. So it's best if you prepare and arrive here 2 hours before your domestic flight.
You know, Andrew, you mentioned those Caribbean regions which were just devastated by Irma. What have you heard about the possibility of flights in and out of those regions? Could it take some time?
For commercial flights, yes. You know, and obviously I don't want to speak for my colleagues mm-hmm. in the Caribbean, but if the damage is as bad as it looks, it is going to take some time for them to get fixed. You know, they're able to set up the airways so that emergency flights can come in almost immediately, but there's a difference between an airfield that is ready for emergency flights and an airfield that's ready for commercial flights. So it will take some time for some of those repairs to take place.
Now, we've heard about this other guy coming in, Hurricane Jose. How close are you all monitoring that?
No way, Jose. and I'm sure I'm not the first person that has said
sure.
that. We are continuing to monitor it. It is going to, I guess the meteorological term, it's going to make a loop-de-loop mm-hmm. out in the middle of the Atlantic right now. But within a week or so, we'll have a more defined direction as to where it is going. So, you know, we always continue to monitor the weather. That is a huge part of our operations here at the airport.
His friends call him Andy, but he's Andrew Gobiel. He's a spokesperson of Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, as always. Thank you for taking the time with those updates. We appreciate it.
Very good, Rose. We'll talk to you later.
All right.
Support for WABE comes from Live Nation, presenting Two Cellos, accompanied by the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra at Chastain Park Amphitheater on Friday, September 22nd. Tickets available now at livenation.com.
It's easy to look at the headlines to get a sense of the news.
9 senators rejected that Senate version of the bill.
Venezuela was paralyzed by strikes and protests.
This missile can actually travel much farther than...
All Things Considered digs into the center of the story to help you really understand not just what's happening, but why. Stand with the facts. Listen every day. From 4 to 6:30, it's All Things Considered here on 90.1 WABE.
If you missed any part of today's show, we got you. You can catch up on all the interviews you missed at wabe.org/closerlook. And let me know what you think. Tweet me at WABE Rose Scott or send an email to rose@wabe.org. This is member supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta.
My name is Dowie Dolman. I live in Tucker. I actually just moved to Georgia because of family, girlfriend, and a better opportunity for job-wise. My first impression is there's a lot more stuff you can do besides, you know, just staying at home. It's a lot of activities, you know. I would describe Tucker, Georgia as, you know, it's a spot where it's very convenient, you know. It's away from the expensive apartments in downtown Atlanta. It's cheaper, and also it's right where it's not busy, where the traffic is hectic.
My father was a young man.
Look, you gotta work, but where you work, that's up to you.
I don't really understand these young kids who go into retail for minimum wage when you can make so much more money and have a lot more fun in restaurants.
Fun and some failure, too. I'm Kai Rizdahl, how to be a restaurateur and an entrepreneur. Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.1 WABE.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. As always, I'm Rose Scott. We're going to shift conversations now to another type of storm. That is, the personal information of 143 million individuals has been hacked and stolen. There's no other way to put it. Atlanta-based credit reporting agency Equifax says it happened in May. Social Security numbers, driver's license, and personal addresses were some of the data that was accessed. Now, to say there's fallout from all of this is an understatement, and joining me now to weigh in is Roy Hatley, Jr. He's a cybersecurity expert and attorney. And on the line, our good friend Tom Smith, an economist and professor at Emory University's Guazzetta Business School. Gentlemen, thanks for taking the time.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Hey, Rose. Thanks
all right.
a lot.
Tom, you safe?
I am good.
All
I'm
right.
in shape.
Before we get into the how and why it happened, here's a quote from Equifax Chief Executive Officer Richard Smith, no relation to Tom Smith. Here's what he had to say. Quote, Equifax will not be defined by this incident, but rather by how we respond. Roy Hatley, Jr., your response to that?
They should be defined by this incident. It is, when you look at what it was, a breach of 143 million records. By a company that is supposed to safeguard those records. You know, Equifax is one of the three credit reporting mm-hmm. agencies, largest credit reporting agencies. And with that, I would argue, comes, you know, a responsibility to keep those records secure. They know that they are a target for a hacker. They know that their systems are going to be under attack day in and day out, 24/7. And as such, they really should be defined by the level of security that they put forth before something happens. So to say how we respond, yes, that's important, but it never should have happened to begin with.
Tom, your thoughts on that quote?
Well, I think the people are responding by, you know, pushing their stock price down, right? I mean, mm-hmm. people are responding throughout the markets by saying, you know, do we trust all of these credit reporting agencies? And money is talking, and you're seeing the stocks being driven downwards.
And Tom, I'll stay with you because that was my next question. How bad is this for a company that makes money on keeping track of people's personal information?
It's not good. It's terrible. I mean, Equifax wants to have the kind of credit, literally, in the market that says, look, when we put information on paper and people are using that information to determine your credit worthiness, that they're getting it right. And then to have that information leak so that, you know, my credit report might be interpreted because somebody hacks that information as I'm engaging in behavior that isn't credit worthy it's really terrible for me, and it's terrible for them.
And Tom, from a business lens viewpoint, can you understand any strategy as to why Equifax waited so long between discovering the breach and then making the public announcement?
Generally, companies do much better, at least from the market perspective, when they own up to breaches and then try to fix them. With people knowing that, you know, they've got to protect their own personal information, I haven't spoken to anybody from Equifax to identify if they were trying to uncover how the breach was made or if they're trying to fix things. And so generally, you know, the best thing is do a mea culpa very quickly and then try to resolve the issues with your customers.
Roy, you're an attorney. You advise clients in these kinds of situations. What do you think the strategy was here with Equifax in this time frame?
That's hard to say. You look at it, and that was a long time. Sometimes law enforcement will ask a company to delay letting, this type of breach be known. I don't know that that's the case here. Mm-hmm. Again, though, that's a very long time frame when you start talking about a month plus. And the problem with that length of time frame is that for customers whose data was affected, it's out there in the marketplace. And mm-hmm. So you have started to hear reports of people having unauthorized accounts opened. And those sorts of things can impact your credit. They can impact your livelihood. Credit reports go beyond just mere granting of credit now. They can have impact with your job, new jobs that you're doing, when background checks, credit checks. They can have an impact in the rates that you pay. They can have an impact in whether you get that mortgage. The implications are far, far reaching. And so for a company such as Equifax to not let that be known as soon as possible so that people can react accordingly does make one wonder what the delay was.
What would you have advised Equifax to do if they reached out to you and saying, hey, we discovered 20 minutes ago, 140 million three people's accounts have been compromised here?
Right. The first thing you do is you stop the hemorrhaging. You figure out what happened. You figure out where the breach was, how it occurred, and you make sure you plug those holes so that you can, again, stop the hemorrhaging. Once that happens, then you determine whether it was, in fact, a breach of personally identifiable information, names, social security numbers,
how
things like that.
How is a breach determined? Is there a little light that goes off that says, hey, alert, alert, alert?
Typically, you have systems in place that can see these intrusions occurring or trying to occur, and you can then stop them before they even occur. Sometimes your systems will say something has happened. Mm-hmm. You saw an outflow of data, so you can stop it then. And then in the worst case scenario, law enforcement will come and tell you, look, we've determined that you've had a breach. We saw your information out in some of these marketplaces around the world where this type of information is stored and sold. And, that's the worst case when you're told that you've had a breach.
Tom Smith, let's go back to the markets, because when the news of the breach was made public, Equifax shares fell 13%. That was last week. And then yesterday, an additional 8%. Do you think this will continue?
Yeah. I mean, unless they engage in a practice that gets their customers feeling comfortable that their information is secure, I think that the way they've rolled it out, I mean, just personally, and the market is speaking for that, is that they put up a system online so you could check your name and your Social Security number. I tried that, and it identified that my information was potentially leaked. Mm-hmm. And my wife tried it, but we also tried it with a dummy account. So I tried it with my dog's name and some made-up numbers, and allegedly his information has been, breached. So
your dog's information has been
breached?
Yeah,
I read online about this service, and then I also read that people had been trying to see if they could kind of hack the system to see, okay, has my information really been hacked? Has it not been hacked? But if I just make up some names and some numbers, and is Equifax going to say that my information is or isn't hacked? So I did it for myself. My wife did it, and we did it for my dog and some made-up numbers. And, it says, yes, my dog's Social Security number has potentially been released through this hack. That's not to say that they're not trying to fix the problem. What I'm saying here is that the system that Equifax has put in place to try to minimize the damage is not a real good fix. And mm-hmm. clearly the market is speaking that way as well. I mean, you can go online and you can put your information into their system along with the last six digits of your Social Security mm-hmm. number, and it will probably come back and say, yeah, your information may have been released through this hack. But they're not telling you, here's how you can fix mm-hmm. it, or here's how you can try to stop that hemorrhaging. They've offered these different services. One was for a fee. Now they're making it free. There might be some potential that by clicking on these things, you're not going to be eligible to hold them accountable in a class action lawsuit.
Which is another issue, yeah.
There's so many things that it's like, okay, I'm sure your other guests can say, okay, if I was on this line here helping a client do this, we could have rolled this out in a different way. And at least personally, I'm just speaking for the market, and the market, I think, is feeling the same, seeing the same things that I've seen.
Roy, roll out, good
right.
or bad?
You know, you asked earlier, Rose, about how, you know, what I'd advise a client. One of the crisis management, I mean, this is crisis management 101. You've got a problem, you address it quickly, you're transparent. That's not the case here. You know, you had a month delay, that's a problem. And then once the quote-unquote solution is rolled out to the consumer, to the marketplace, you look at that consumer and you say, what should the consumer think when you can put in dummy socials and get back, you know, whether your information has been breached or not? What should the consumer think when you say, okay, if you avail yourselves of these services that we're offering, you have to agree to arbitration, and now you can't sue us and you can't hold us accountable? I mean, it was how not to do crisis management 101 in terms of how you address it. And not only is the marketplace speaking, but the legal marketplace is starting to speak. Mm-hmm. You're starting to see numerous lawsuits. You know, I think they've had 45 or so filed already, including a couple of class action lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll see many, many more. I don't know whether this is serious or not, but I saw something this morning where you could, you know, go to somebody's Twitter account or something like that, and they tell you how to file your own lawsuit in small claims court against Equifax. So this is going to go on for a long time, this, you know, the legal ramifications around it, because it is such mm-hmm. a big breach of trust. And I think that's the biggest thing here that any company has to look at is, in the marketplace, you are selling trust, especially when you are a credit reporting agency such as Equifax, mm-hmm. and that trust has been breached, and they have not done arguably a good job of trying to, one, admit the problem, and two, regain that trust.
The voice you hear is Roy Hadley, Jr. He's a cybersecurity expert and attorney, and I'm also joined on the line now by Tom Smith, an economist and professor at Emory University's Guazzetta Business School. And gentlemen, let's just be really clear about these data breaches, and Roy, I'll start with you. Is there any way to, obviously, you just can't prevent this. And Roy, you've been on this show before to talk about all this. And when we love technology, it's great. But the bottom line, it appears, is that the bad guys, the bad folks, just are a step ahead of people like Equifax.
The good guys. You know, true.
And that could be, let me get this right. I said bad guys, right. Bad people. I'll get an email.
Right. I'm glad you said it, not me. But I think what you see is that, you know, I think it was John Dillinger that was asked, why did he rob banks? And the response was, that's where the money is. And so now you're seeing data, and data has a value to it. And so when you look at the database that Equifax has and the database that other big companies, aggregators have, there's value in that data. And so it's going to be a target, and it's going to be a very lucrative target. And so, to your question earlier, no, you really can't stop it 100%. But what you do try to do, is, especially if you're in Equifax, is put in place systems to minimize the risk, to minimize the hemorrhaging, as I call it, in case there is a breach, to identify it quickly and then minimize it. That's what you have to do, because now you've got nation state actors, you've got criminal organizations that are hiring the best and the brightest. Make no mistake about it. They're hiring the best and the brightest, and they are trying to stay one step ahead. And so companies like Equifax are playing catch up, but that doesn't abrogate their responsibility to do all that they can to keep that data safe and secure.
Tom Smith, if you're the other two major credit reporting agencies, what lessons are you learning?
Well, I think that they should make sure that they've got something like your other guest that's working for them, right? I mean, the truth is that you've got to secure this information. I mean, I think one of the points that you haven't brought up yet, but you may have been bringing up, is that the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, they identify that identity theft is a significant threat to the security of the United States. I mean, this is how terrorist organizations get funds. This is how terrorist states try to hold countries and companies hostage by collecting their data, by identifying compromat and other kinds of compromising information. And we've seen it in the United States. We saw it with Sony getting hacked and having to change the rollout of movies. HBO getting hacked, individual participants, major corporations getting hacked and their information being held for ransom. And, countries can be brought down by, economies can be brought down by the breach of information. And you might think, oh, this is just, my Social Security number, your Social Security number, and that might be difficult for me to get a car loan in a year or so. The truth is that they steal their information, they get a credit card, they use that to launder money, and the extent that that can roll into terrorist activities cannot be understated.
Roy Thomas talking about the potential global effect of all of this. Your thoughts?
He brings up an excellent point. Again, most times you're seeing foreign actors that are hacking of this scale, the nation states that are using it not only for individual terrorist activities, but for nation state terrorist activities. And so you really do have to be concerned about how you keep your data secure. Without getting too far off the path here, you start talking about data breaches and infrastructure, our power grids, all of those sorts of things, nuclear facilities, all are controlled by systems. And when you start having these types of hacks, yes, it's Social Security numbers today, and that allows you to get monies, but it's potentially infrastructure tomorrow, the power grid tomorrow.
And let's be clear, because I've noticed you use hacked, and then we've been using breach, and for some, those are two different things.
They absolutely are two different things, but, a hack is going to be the actual act itself of going in and getting the information.
But a breach could be someone internally accidentally doing something they shouldn't have done, and then that information going out.
Absolutely. You still see, to that point, you still see a lot of data breaches are internal. And I started to say inside job, but that assumes that there's a nefarious intent to it. We still see a lot of data breaches by people leaving their laptops in the car and somebody breaking in the car and stealing it, and the laptop isn't encrypted. So you still see a lot of that. You still see people clicking on links that they get in email phishing attacks. I've read a statistic the other day, and I'm not a mathematician, but if there's a 1% chance that you or I click on the link, which everybody says, okay, that's low. But if you have 500 employees, all of a sudden, and you're going to get emails about this, all the math people.
I'm ready.
You're going to get those emails. All of a sudden, you're at a 40 or 50% chance of somebody in your organization clicking on that link. So, that's what we have to keep in mind. You have to have a mindset of security. So even Equifax, you can have the best systems, technical systems in place, but if your people aren't with that mindset of security, then you're going to still have a problem.
As we wrap up, Tom Smith, cybersecurity changing the way that business models operate. How do you see all this playing out in terms of what Equifax is able to do? They talked about their response is what would define them. Well, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think they're going to react to the market. I mean, clearly the market is driving their stock price down. People are not confident in how the company is going about doing their business. And so I think that they're going to have to come up with a solution that calms those fears. And I mean, it's an Atlanta company. I'm very bullish on Atlanta. I want to be confident that this company is going to respond with something that says, okay, we've got this under control, and we're going to make you comfortable, and we're going to secure your information. I trust that they're going to do this. documents, and I sort of have to because, I think my information has been breached. I think your information has been breached. So we have to trust that they're gonna find a way to sort of secure our information going forward.
Roy, I'll give you the last word.
And I think that that word, trust, is that word that we ought to end on. And, a company like Equifax, you do trust as a consumer that they're going to keep that information secure. You do trust as a business that uses them that information that you're getting, that you're purchasing, is accurate and secure. So Equifax is going to have to do something to regain the trust, not only of the consumers, but the marketplace. And unless and until they do, and I'm kind of like everybody, I hope they do, and I'm confident they will. They've got to figure that part out. But in the meantime, consumers, you need to check your credit files. You need to make sure that you are not seeing bad activity on it. You might consider freezing your credit so that nobody can open an account in your name. And the other thing that I read the other day is file your taxes early. That way, if somebody is trying to file fraudulent tax returns on your behalf, you beat them to the punch.
All right. Roy Hadley, Jr., cybersecurity expert and attorney. Also on the line, Tom Smith, economist and professor at Emory University's Goizetta Business School. Gentlemen, thank you for taking the time and really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good information.
Pleasure Thanks, being bro. Here.
Support for WABE comes from Comcast Business. Comcast is building a gig speed network providing small businesses across the country with the opportunity to dream gig. Learn more at dreamgig.com. Comcast Business, built for business.
It's summertime. The living may be easy, and donating your old car, truck, or boat is even easier. Just call the WABE Vehicle Donation Program at 1-866-901-WABE or donate securely online at WABE.org. And thanks.
My name is Hawa and I live in Claxton. One thing I like about Claxton is a diversity city, and there is like many other people come from other countries. I have a lot of friends from different backgrounds. Clarkston feel like to me is like an immigration center, like where some people from other country and you get to meet the friends and get to know other people from other nation. If I would change anything about Clarkston, I would say like about the school where I go, like we have to have a new building and new stuff like this.
Tuned to 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. This is Closer Look, and I'm Rose Scott. Now, throughout today's program, we've been hearing about the impact of Tropical Storm Irma across the state and in the Atlanta region, and many remained at home due to safety concerns. That included agencies and organizations that usually are out every day. The local nonprofit Open Hand prepares and delivers 5,000 meals per day to Atlantans who are in need, but they had to stay in because of yesterday's weather. Well, today they are back open and hoping to get meals to those in need delivered. Joining me now on the line is Carrie Morrison, Director of Volunteer Services at Open Hand. Carrie, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Rose. Hi, everybody.
Typically, you all deliver meals just within the city of Atlanta. Is that true?
Correct. And we have our staff drivers help us with 19 outer lane counties, but volunteers help us with inside 285.
And in your time with the organization, how unusual is it to cancel a daily delivery?
This is very unusual. This is probably I've been with this organization for about 6 years. This is probably the first time, besides the snow apocalypse, but we had a couple days to try to figure that out and get that all taken care of. I think we had 2 days that we weren't open then, and then this has been the second one. So it's very, very rare. Otherwise, we're out in the community 6 days a week delivering meals.
So not only do you typically have the drivers out, do you have volunteers who come in and package and prepare? How does all this usually work?
Yes, very intricate. A lot of logistics goes into it. But we had to close our offices yesterday, so we weren't able to pack our meals and deliver the meals yesterday. So we did that this morning, and then we did a second delivery this afternoon. So that leaves us with about 2,000 shelf-stable boxes that we need to finish packing tomorrow morning, and packing meals tomorrow morning, as well as delivering them out into the community that we're really looking for individuals with any flexibility of their time tomorrow to help us in the morning time.
So are you all still behind right now, Carrie?
Yes, we are. And we still have clients that are out there waiting for us to get deliveries this afternoon that haven't had a delivery yesterday. And for some people, we may be their only food source. So that's why we're really trying to get as much food out today as possible, which puts us behind for tomorrow and the next day.
If someone wants to volunteer just to help you all get caught up, what specific requirements are you seeking?
Good question. So for our delivery drivers, just a driver's license that they're able to deliver and that they're over 26 years old, and that they could pass a background check and a motor vehicle report. So we can run all that. It takes like 15 minutes when they come in, and we can get that all set up. And I have a link that if they go to our website and sign up, it has all the information on there.
What's that website, Carrie?
It's openhandatlanta.volunteerhub.com.
And you're mostly seeking volunteers in terms of drivers?
Drivers, and then to help us with our shelf-stable boxes tomorrow morning. So those who are a little uncomfortable and they don't want to drive, we are looking for drivers that maybe have four-wheel drive that feel comfortable driving in these conditions. And then for those who aren't able to deliver, we need shelf-stable boxes made. I have about 2,000 boxes that we're trying to get out to our seniors as well, because there's more hurricanes and inclement weather coming, so we want to make sure that we have some boxes for them. So we need to finish those up tomorrow, and we have about 2,000 that we need to put together.
And
so
that,
probably about 20 or 25 volunteers on campus.
And that website again, Carrie?
Is openhandatlanta.volunteerhub.com.
All right. Carrie Morrison is Director of Volunteer Services at Open Hand. They deliver meals to those in need, and right now they're in need for any volunteers to help them get back on schedule to delivering those meals. Carrie, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much, and thank you for all the support with our community.
You're listening to Closer Look. If you missed any of today's conversation, catch up on our website at wabe.org/closerlook. Again, wabe.org/closerlook. Also, we want to hear from you. Send our host, Rose Scott, an email, rose@wabe.org. This is 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.
On Friday, NASA's Cassini spacecraft will plunge into Saturn's atmosphere and disintegrate. The scientists who've worked on it have mixed emotions.
I've gone through all the stages of mourning, all the stages of grief.
It's going to be a sad day. It's going to be a sad day.
But it's a very proud moment, too.
I'm Ari Shapiro. That story, plus the impact of Hurricane Irma, on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 on 90.1 WABE.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE. I'm Rose Scott. You know, as journalists, we're supposed to be neutral, right? But I gotta tell you, it's great to see so many people helping one another. Now, in addition to those power outages, we know that Tropical Storm Irma left a lot of downed trees throughout the state. Well, one neighborhood that had its fair share of tree debris and leaky roofs is Metlock Park in Decatur. And residents in the community got together and decided to help each other remove debris and patch up houses. And joining me online now are Metlock Park residents Stephen Paris and Zach Raby. Stephen, Zach, thanks for taking the time.
Hey.
Now, I understand you all are part of some Metlock chainsaw brigade. What do you guys like, super chainsaw patching roof guys?
No, we just have a Facebook page for the neighborhood here, and it's such a great community over here that when storms happen and stuff, we all get together and go out and just help people in the neighborhood that need helps, you know, with trees in the driveway or leaking roofs. We were up on the roofs yesterday putting tarps on for people during the rain and just help neighbors helping neighbors.
How many in your group?
There's about 2,000 people on our Facebook page.
Wow. And how long y'all been doing this?
A few years.
And so, folks, you see a down tree, you grab your chainsaw. Obviously, you're going to make sure that there are no power lines involved. And you all
exactly. If there's power lines or something, we let the professionals handle that. We're just here to help people stay dry and safe.
Can one of you explain to me now what the scene is like in your neighborhood? Are there still a lot of down trees and debris everywhere?
Yeah, probably about half the neighborhood is still without power. There's still trees across roads and in people's driveways and stuff. We were out this morning clearing a couple driveways for some neighbors, but there's still a lot of big trees came down.
I can't remember if I'm talking to Stephen or Zach. So
this is Stephen.
All right, Stephen. So, you know, you all are doing this. You talk about just neighbors helping neighbors. What does it mean for your neighbors and each other for everyone to come together and just help out?
Well, it's just such a great community over here. It just feels good to be able to help people. You know, if people are trapped in their house or have roof leaks, and, you know, we can get there before they get to call their insurance companies and stuff and just help them keep their place dry. So it just feels good to help people.
Now, how's your houses?
My house is fine. I'm without power still since yesterday, but nothing else, not a problem. So,
is most of the neighborhood still without power?
Yeah, about half the neighborhood at least, probably, without power.
Any idea from Georgia Power when they expect to get it restored?
They're working on the neighborhood. They're around, so they're working on it, and they do a great job, so we appreciate all they do.
You all sound a little tired. How?
I was a little tired. We were waiting for your phone call so you could take our nap.
Oh, I apologize. But you all, how many homes have you all been able to help so far?
Probably about a dozen people. We put probably 4 or 5 tarps on people's houses while it was raining out yesterday to keep the water out. And then we went back out again this morning and just helped some people clean driveways and make sure people were safe, knocking on doors, some of the elderly residents and stuff.
That's a lot of work, guys.
It's very rewarding. It's nice to help people.
Yeah, of course. And neighbors just reach out to you via the Facebook group?
Yeah, we have a great Facebook group. So, if anybody needs anything, they just post on there, and then we just go help them.
We're
not the only ones. There's a lot of people in the neighborhood that were out mm-hmm. today. A lot of neighbors were out helping neighbors. So there was a lot of people out and about helping each other out. It's nice to see.
Well, Stephen and Zach, I want you all to get your rest. Stephen and Zach are Medlock Park residents, and they're among apparently a group of people who've been helping their neighbors following Tropical Storm Irma. Stephen and Zach, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome.
Get some rest, fellas.
Okay, thanks.
And in case you missed it, Georgia Governor Nathan Deal today lifted the mandatory evacuation order for 6 coastal counties. And of course, that was initially ordered when Hurricane Irma was on its way. Now, yes, recovery has begun, but Deal says, look, getting back to normal will take time.
The entire state of Georgia has been affected by this hurricane/tropical storm. And as a result of that, recovery is going to be a little more slow because there are so much greater territories that have to be covered before everything can be back to a normal environment.
And getting back to normal doesn't just apply to Georgia residents. Homer Bryson is the director of Georgia Emergency Management and Homeland Security Agency.
We are urging Georgia and Florida residents to remain in place until local officials authorize reentry. Once officials say it is safe to return home, use designated evacuation routes for reentry, and included in that are state roads.
Now, there's another reason, Bison says, to simply, folks, stay put.
Fuel outages are being reported throughout the state. In addition to the difficulty with resupply due to the storm, stations in South Georgia are also experiencing power outages and flooding of their tanks, preventing them from reopening. We want everyone to be aware that access to fuel will not be guaranteed if they choose to travel south.
And as you know, many lost power due to Tropical Storm Irma. And Paul Bowers is president and CEO of Georgia Power.
There's not a region within this state that has not been affected by some power outages. Within the metro region specifically, there are currently 400,000 customers without power. At our peak, we had almost a million customers without power. Today, at this moment, we're at 780. So over 20% have been restored. But let me reiterate. Every region of this state has been affected, and it's going to take time for us to get back to normal in terms of power restoration. We have over 6,000 resources dedicated to this restoration effort, and we will take numerous days in some areas of the state to get power restored. But our focus is to get our customers back online, get to normal as fast as we can.
Now, as far as traveling on the roadways, Georgia Department of Transportation Commissioner Russell McMurray says, yes, all interstates in Georgia are passable, but please stay off the roads if you can while GDOT is working.
Starting yesterday, we had over 1,100 incidences of road closures. This morning, we are down to 179 closures across the state. Oftentimes, the trees that are down may have a power line in them. So, again, we're asking you to stay home and stay out of the way so that between our crews and the power crews, we can get these roads cleared and open very quickly.
And he adds, it's not just the roads that need repairing.
As the power is out, that has also caused over 250 traffic signals to be non-functional. In fact, there's about 150 signal heads that are missing, that are damaged, that have to be replaced.
Now, as for traveling via MARTA, rail service has been restored, but there are numerous bus routes impacted by downed trees and power lines. Officials say check the website for that list. Now, MARTA will add an extra day of credit for those with registered Breeze cards because of yesterday's suspended service. And again, if you are still without power, officials with Georgia Power say it could take a few days, it could take a week, it could take maybe an hour. It just depends on where you're located. That's it for today's edition of Closer Look, which is produced by Candace Wheeler, Ebony Lemon, and Finley Fox. And our engineer is Elizabeth Eads. Our executive producer is Christine Dempsey. A special thanks to the entire WAB News team and their work yesterday as well. Outstanding. Plus, our digital services crew. If you missed any of today's show, you can find their entire program at wabe.org/closerlook. And you can now listen to Closer Look weeknights at 9 p.m. We're back tomorrow at 1 for another edition of Closer Look. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott.